Hey guys, it's Alec and Connor from Propagandos. This week we had an esteemed guest, Falconry Finance, a Twitter user that I really like. A kind of a meandering, a long form.
It's definitely a sprawling, long form conversation. We didn't watch a movie this week. We just had a deeper conversation about disinformation, what disinformation is. Is there such a thing as disinformation, and how the media and government and individual actors kind of utilize it and are formed by it?
A little bit of current events, a little bit of Twitter drama,
and a lot of laughs.
Yeah, it's an organic conversation. We hope you guys enjoy. So can we call you Bernie, or should we call you Falcon, or should we call you Falcon Refinance? What do you want?
You can call me whatever you like.
Okay.
All right. So
Bernie's the easiest.
Bernie.
Okay.
Do you care if we use your last name?
Not at all. Yeah, that's all right. I'm actually a lawyer, so I'm really good at talking in specific ways that don't get me or other people in trouble. It's one of talents that you learn in law school.
What's your specialization?
Oh my God, you don't know about my background.
I don't know about your background.
Okay.
Well, real quick, hey everybody, welcome to Propagandos. It's Saturday, September 7th at 3 p.m. It's me, Connor, joined by Alec, and today our guest is UAE Exotic Falconry Finance, aka Bernie Goldsmith. Bernie, thank you so much for coming on. You were just about to tell me your background.
Oh God, it's such a privilege to let my voice wash over this sea of anonymous people I'll never see. Like, I don't know who listens to this, but right now I'm jacking into your brain. So what was the question? You wanted to know my background?
Yeah, I asked what your specialization was as a lawyer.
Oh my God. It's a big question. I've had a very interesting life, and so I'll try to limit the scope of my answer. My background is in like high level corporate law, like the highest you can get in the world. For example, literally, I was one of the named counsel for the Chrysler bailout slash merger with Fiat in 2008. I was in charge of every single land lease contract in the United States controlled by Chrysler and any of its subsidiaries. And there were geographic issues. So when it comes to cutting checks worth billions and approaching trillions of dollars, I was at the desk to manage that, for TARP. And then most recently, I got a phone call from somebody in the government who I shall not name, who said, "We need you back. We need you back." And so I became a lawyer for the Small Business Administration Office of Disaster Relief. These are the people that come in and make sure that the businesses rather than the human beings are able to recover. And I was a senior attorney working for them for the PPP, Payment Protection something program. I was one of a bazillion contract attorneys that they hired to hand out a ton of money to people. So I guess in the first instance, I was doing a lot of corporate law from the private side. And on the second instance, I'm doing a business entity law and financing law from the feds. And then there's a little bit of screwduggery there with the U.S. Prosecutor's Office, Southern District Office of Major Crimes and Narcotics. I don't know. Yeah, I got a pretty varied legal past, but I got to tell you, I've seen some shit.
Bernie's got a crazy CV. I mean, let me just introduce Bernie, I guess. Bernie, to me, is what I would call a poster of some renown because I've been following his tweets, and many of them are very, very good tweets. Some of them are actually impactful tweets, as we'll get into later. You might know, and like, including just like general shitposting and having fun on the internet, right? The stuff that we all go to Twitter to do. You've actually done some kind of like breaking news stuff. Like I'm thinking of like the East Palestine PVC cloud thing.
That's right.
I think I literally saw that first from you.
Yeah, that's right. Let's see. I think, yeah, I started posting about it, which inspired somebody to make a video about it, which included my posts about all the pets being dead there, which is true. I don't know if you remember those pictures of the chickens just fucking
dying. Yeah, it was
dying.
Crazy.
And that got picked up by Marjorie Taylor Greene. And you know, I have got 40,000 followers now. I'd say like 20,000 of them are from that incident where the AP, the Associated Press, I'm goddamn sure that they did this in response to the popularity of it, labeled me as Russian disinformation.
Yes. So we'll get to that.
Yeah.
I think you were one of the first people to post about, do you speak Hebrew? I don't know, Bernie.
I do not.
You're one of the first people to post about, I don't know, again, I don't know like what channels this comes through, about Hebrew reporting about the Hannibal Directive basically being used in Kibbutz Be'eri on October 7th, which turned out to be enormously true months later. I mean, it was way, way, way before there was reporting on it.
Yeah, I remember I was on that like immediately. I was one of those people, as soon as everybody was like, it's like one of those things where something goes down at a party and you take a snapshot and like 90% of the people are in shock. And there's like one person who's like, I know what to do. That's me on October 7th, busy shitting on the Israelis in the midst of their orchestrated catastrophe that they were busy setting, you know, literally doing set dressing for from their helicopters.
So like occasionally Bernie will make what are basically like news scoops, right? But mostly what I know him for is what a kind of tweet that I would describe as funny and true.
The lathe of heaven?
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, that's a different thing. Go ahead.
Like, I wrote down some examples. So I wrote this one down as Dasha Red Scare, gun range, Palestinian target, which was weird and funny and true.
That was breaking news. I stole that from the Something Awful forum. So often I get my scoops from just literally stealing it from people. I steal tons of stuff from them, and I do it sometimes just to make them bad or
what
mad.
What is this? What is this Dasha Red Scare thing you're talking about?
Dasha from Red Scare is very edgy. And what is it, Bernie? She went to a gun range. And
oh, my God. Okay, so yeah, so imagine if you would, in the theater of your mind, some pictures taken Instagram style and shared in that medium because they're proud of this. Dasha and some dorky looking, I guess, nihilist guy dressing up targets for shooting range targets in a suicide vest and a Palestinian scarf, or as she would later claim, an Arab scarf. And then go ahead and breaking that.
I mean,
along with some old pictures of Brace Belden hanging out with Dasha and laughing at an SS flag they're raising in an apartment. What a bad decision that was, my man.
For extremely not online listeners, which I know there are a few, the Red Scare podcast is an edgy leftist, now post-left podcast. This is real internet brain rot.
Revealed to be funded by Peter Thiel.
Literally another in the long string of disinformation and topics that we're going to discuss. Literally another case of that. I've got another one here, which I wrote down as the Williamsburg shit barbecue sausage tweet, which enormous traction. Which
that
I assume is true.
Stolen.
I literally don't. That I literally don't know
stolen.
If it's true.
So what happened was there was this is one of my things. Yeah, you know, I think that like Twitter and 4chan is basically like a big biological reactor where you dump things in from different organisms, or like, you know, you have different organisms, they have lysis or whatever, and they spill their guts all over, and it becomes like a big cytoplasm stew where like some kind of chemical from one organism and another kind of chemical from another organism will be in the chaos, have the occasion to jam into each other and form a molecule that's novel that no one organism could have made. And this is one of those cases where I took the picture of something from a restaurant that looks like shit, literal human feces, like greasy. It looks like something that you'd put out plausibly on, and it's served on butcher paper. So it really does look like somebody won the lottery and quit that way. And I took that with a combination with another viral tweet where there's some dipshit in Williamsburg who's disappointed with a cafeteria tray of like little samples of barbecue saying that it costs like $169. So that's an instant where I saw two tweets and I said, we need to mix these two up. And that's what I did. And my justification for doing that and not being some kind of horrible thief is that greater cosmology that I'm serving that I just described, this sort of like vat, this primordial vat, and all of the combinations that don't work, you never see. And that's just one you saw. And it wouldn't happen without me. And I didn't create any one aspect of it. Right.
We are vehicles for like mimetic synthesis, right? In like the Hegelian sense, like we are all little bioreactors where we synthesize, you know, various things we pick up and like jokes come out, right? If you're a funny guy, yeah, like
I gotta
jokes
tell
come
you
out.
That dinner really did look like it was synthesized by a bioreactor, by the way. You guys do need to look at it.
That
it
might
is just
be
the greasiest looking turd, but it is legitimately sausage. So that one did not.
Episode art. Connor?
That's not going to be episode art. We can't have people like open their phone and be like, oh, they're talking about poop today.
Shit logs.
Yeah, we
okay.
can't do that.
So let's move on to the final section of tweets I have written down, which are funny and I put untrue in quotes. So Jordan Peterson daughter hospital milking tweet. Which,
oh, yeah. So that's, you know, I got robbed on that one.
which is so big. When you search for Falconry Finance, it's the top result, right? Because it's been iFunnied. It's like been copied so many times.
Well,
and people tried to find
it
after it got deleted.
Okay. Yeah, if you look for it on Google, it's the top result. Does it appear in the search index on Twitter at all? Because after I posted that,
no,
they like hell banned that tweet. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, it's impossible to find.
Yeah.
Through normal means.
Well, so that's how I suffer for my art. Like, you know, they used to burn people at the stake and destroy their work. Here, they just ghost ban me, which is in a way worse. I like to call this the lathe of heaven, where I looked at something and I think this plays into disinformation. I mean, like, okay, I'm going to say I came on here without knowing the name of your podcast or the subject of this episode. So I'm coming in cold. But I do have something to say about the Jordan Peterson sex milking table incident. So what I did, it's another case of me mixing stuff up. I am really big on actually as a higher level organism that we are, that's capable of eusocial planning and organization. I'm a real big fan of, you know, responding to the ongoing COVID crisis as if it's actually existing and doing so in a way that protects the vulnerable among us, because in a way we will all be vulnerable at certain times in our lives, and to not acknowledge that, behave towards others as we wish to have others behave towards us during the same time that we'll be experiencing, you know, man, like, that's a real, I don't forget how they started that sentence, but, it's a real way that I'm using to weed people out. So anyway, I'm in the COVID scene and they have this picture of somebody in a BDSM outfit on a table. And I'll describe the outfit. It doesn't look like it's BDSM. It's like a medical setting, 'cause this is medical fetish porn, right? Table, it's got these tubes and tanks and all these really complicated devices hooked up to this guy, including like a gas mask. So you can't even see the body. You can see nothing of the man who is in this cocoon of machinery and plastic wrap, right? The only thing you can see is this mysterious tube with a milky substance in it. And then you start staring at it more and you realize this isn't a hospital. This isn't any kind of normal hospital. This is a man being mechanically masturbated by a machine, and oh my god, it's really taken a lot of spunk out of this guy. I didn't know that somebody could actually do that, but damn. So anyway,
somebody's like stylized basement or something.
And it's from a fetish photo. It's I forget the name of the performance artist who took it. She's got, god, it's got to be like $50,000 worth of equipment. It's amazing. Anyway, this came out during the COVID thing as like, oh, my grandfather's dying of COVID. This is him in the bed. You know, it's like a joke. And you look at it and you're like, you know, it's the kind of thing you send your grandmother who believes it, and then sends your mom who kind of believes it, and then who sends, you know, your brother who realizes that you just got the whole family with a sex bed. So
did
anyway,
that lady
this
just
is,
happened to look like Mikaela Patterson, because that's the
exactly.
Yeah, that's the hook, right?
In
there's
this,
a lady in the foreground kind of smiling into a selfie.
That's exactly right. That's the lady. It looks exactly like his daughter. So I didn't make the photo. I didn't make his daughter, but I invented this by putting the two together to say, hey, boom. So I don't know what happened in your opinion.
Well, I mean, this was at the time when Jordan Peterson was on his bizarre hiatus kidnapping trip to Bulgaria and or Russia for treatment for a benzo
That's
addiction,
right.
I believe.
That's right.
That
they
was
had
the
him
context
strapped
in
to
which
a bed. That's right.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Which say it was so pertinent because nobody knew where he was, and the allegations were he was maybe in Bulgaria receiving experimental treatment in some quackery, right, while his daughter partied at night. Or there were a lot of allegations swirling, and it came out right then, and it blew up like wildfire. It
made sense to people, which is why they passed it on without looking at it close enough to realize that they were literally sending a giant shot of cum in everybody's timeline.
So when I first saw this image, it was shared as if it were real. And I believe it was quote tweeted. And somebody said, like, this is what happens when you like eat an all beef diet. And so, like, yeah, there were too many factors, real life factors going on surrounding Jordan Peterson that made this so easy to believe.
And you bake in things that are obviously wrong so that the people who get upset that the thing is like spreading around, they can start arguing about it and saying that it's wrong. And then the people who are in on it can start arguing with them, you know, saying, oh, no, this is right, disingenuously. No, it's great.
So let's talk about the J.D. Vance couch tweet. I don't know if it was you, but you were kind of part of a string of people that basically either boosted it or made it happen. And when it permeated through, when I first saw that clip of like Walls awkwardly doing that joke, and then he actually kind of like stomped on his own punchline by being like,
we got him.
What was it, Connor? It was so annoying.
He said, I'll debate him if he can get up off the couch. That is, see what I did there?
See what I did there, which is just bad comedy writing. But when it broke like the membrane of the screen, and I saw that clip and I was like, holy shit, this is not AI. Tim Walls just did this. I was like, what the fuck even is posting?
There was also a politician from Arizona who spoke about this at a rally, I believe, leading up to the DNC. And for those who don't know, I mean, if you listen to this podcast, you know what we're talking about. There's a bit of disinformation that made the rounds about J.D. Vance, a page from his book, Hillbilly Elegy, where he goes into detail about fucking a couch. And it was so believable just because... You know, sorry to all the people who are raised by their grandparents out there, but if you're raised by your grandparents, odds are you're going to turn out to be a weird kid. Like, you're going to start feeling these urges. Your grandpa's not going to know how to talk to you about this. Having sex with the couch, not that unbelievable for a weird little kid.
Maybe for you, I don't know, man.
even for people not raised by their grandparents, the idea that, like, an awkward kid would try to, like, fuck a piece of furniture is... totally believable. And then the idea that J.D. Vance would put it in his memoir is actually pretty believable.
Yeah.
How do you picture that, though? So there's like a difference between reading something and saying that makes sense, and then holding it in your mind's eye and trying to reconstruct a world in which that occurred. And in this case, you can do both. You can do both. So it not only passes the smell test, it passes the visualization test. And the fact that it would take people there where they would have to use the hardware of their mind to emulate the thing that I created with words, that is how the virus worm, that little line of code, gets into their head and they start constructing castles with it that cannot be dismantled. That's how we get them. So that unity, right, where you make them hold it in their mind, then you've got them. You've dirtied them. You got them thinking about Santorum leaking out of somebody's anus.
You're just a perfect propagandist chaos agent. This is incredible.
We literally could not have had a better person on to talk about this. You literally, I don't know if I can think of one.
Oh, my gosh.
And the question is, who did the couch thing? Who did the couch thing? Who's responsible for all of that?
I don't know.
There is no one that's responsible for all of that. No one person made that happen. And this is a phenomenon that's completely foreign to our ability to analyze media events or report on them, because we need stories that have characters in them, not the output of some kind of supervenient entity composed of tons of anonymous actors that
behaves in a way that we can observe and predict. So it's not just like some kind of pontificated non-material object. It's like it's a grouping of behaviors that exists in a useful way. Like we can look at it and say, like, yeah, that did that. It's like looking at a cloud in the sky and knowing it must exist and having to reconcile that with all of the properties that it has. So in this case, we know that the couch phenomenon happened, but we also know that there's nobody in a shady room somewhere who thought of it. There's somebody who came up with the outline of it. And then what happened was other people filled that in, almost like a writer's room. And it was exactly like a writer's room. And, you know, this is probably why there's a lot of arguments over who comes up with stuff, because money's involved in these circumstances. Thankfully, not here. It's just credit. But in these circumstances, I would argue that nobody came up with it. It was a type of supervenient entity composed of posters. So I'm going to tell you that I had an encounter with CNN, a guy, Donny O'Sullivan, who does I think he's appeared on the QAnon podcast a few times. He's a pretty cool guy. He seems like a nice gentleman. He called me and I had an explanation, you know, because Snopes, looking for somebody to blame it on, blamed it on me. I got, yeah, that's right. Somebody should pull the Snopes quote, because they asked me who's responsible for it. And I said, of course, I'm responsible, knowing that the situation is one in which nobody's responsible. So somebody's got to take the mantle, right? So Donny O'Sullivan calls me. He wants to visit me for an interview because it's pretty big if there's this one person who masterminded the couch thing. Here's what I explained to him. There is nobody to be found. Just as there's no one molecule responsible for the fact that a pot of water is boiling and certain molecules have been kicked out and transitioned into another state completely to become steam, some kind of gas. You never would have thought it looking at a piece of water, but boom, molecules up in the air. What's responsible? Which one of these molecules are responsible? And the answer is none of them. It is the action of the group of them. And if you get a grouping of them, certain properties arise, much like if you get a sufficiently large enough number, statistics can apply. When you get groups of posters acting in concert, they behave as if there are physical properties, as if a pot is boiling. And you can't find the tree that makes it a forest. You can't find the water molecule that wrote the J.D. Vance post. It is the concerted action of all of them. So that's my thesis with regards to the J.D. Vance post. And that's why I didn't get on CNN, those simple-minded fools.
Well, hey, I'm glad you came on Propagandos. We're willing to tell the truth that CNN is too afraid to bring to the American people. Thank you.
Hell yeah.
Or is it the truth? We'll never know.
We'll never
know. What is a truth? I mean, what are we but a system of thought that must maintain internal coherence? And now we can go to the next segment you were talking about. I know exactly what you were talking about. This was a blind interview, ladies and gentlemen.
He's very good, guys. So we transition to our main topic, right? Like, this word disinformation is getting used all the time, right? And we're going to talk about maybe some instances in like the past week or so. But it's like a term that is as ubiquitous and kind of squishy as that. It's almost ceased to have meaning, right? And I say this as a person who reads a lot of tweets, right? So I'm talking about the average person when they use this term, but not just, right? People in news agencies, people with real influential big boy jobs, right? Politicians and stuff. What does it mean? Does disinformation mean something that's made up whole cloth, right? Like the J.D. Vance tweet probably is. Is it something that's half true? Is it like a false equivalence? Is it a distraction? Is it an inconvenient truth, right? There's a big, big, big difference between those two ends.
So I'm interested in the word disinformation because I think the entire word itself is a psyop. The question I would have is, okay, so the idea of disinformation raises a dichotomy. And what's it a dichotomy with? Information? So there's disinformation or information. And I'm going to tell you that this kind of weird object has been introduced to do some sleight of hand conflation moves on us, because everything's information. False information is information. It's information about the person who's telling it. right? It's, yeah. it's you know, or let's say a Russian troll bot is telling me something. That's not disinformation. That's information. If I take that and I look at it, and it's true that it's Russian propaganda, I can infer from that certain things about the mind of the adversary. Whereas here, we have a something called disinformation. I don't know what disinformation might be. Is it information that's false? Is it information that's true, but is designed to cause impermissible thoughts or conclusions that only fools would have? You know, trick me into looking stupid or foolish. Or, you know, would it be, you know, it's a question. What is disinformation? And if you look at it, it's really just a label that's meaningless that can be applied. And once it's applied, it raises this unsolved dichotomy, and you're misusing what information even means. You know, that's I spend most of my time reading lies, because even things that are false, just, you know, testing them around in your head. You know, I say absurdities. 90% of the things I say aren't falsehoods. They're just patent absurdities. And that's information as well. You play around with it like little word equations. So I would say that what disinformation as a word is it's a thought-stopping meme. It's something that's designed to get you to reject something as an object in your cognitive playground, to and just completely having, blanket.
Yeah. And without having to define it as one of those things that I enumerated, right?
It's not false. It's not true. False. It's not. It's just. It's a thing that the very processing of it is a cognito hazard.
It's a statement object that's used by a bad actor, right? It's something a person you don't like says, or a person that you shouldn't trust says. That's
so it's
how
like
it's
tanky
used.
Or bot.
Yes, precisely. Exactly right. Exactly
and
right.
I'm going to tell you that it's useful as a word because it short circuits the ability to evaluate information in just the way that I've said. You are not allowed to look at disinformation to obtain truth from it, because there's truth to be obtained from pretty much any phenomenon that you can encounter in the world. So it is directly an invitation to engage in anti-thought, to remove things from your cosmology of thought. So the people who invented the concept of disinformation are the ones that are trying to manipulate you. I reject the entire concept of it. And I think later in this conversation, if I'm going to guess, because I have my own thesis, I'm going to reject the idea of the word of disinformation for the reasons that I've discussed. Raises a false dichotomy. I mean, it's unsolvable. What do you have? Information and disinformation? Everything is information. You can't just suddenly exclude something from your ontological world because it doesn't fit. That's essentially what this is.
Hearing the word disinformation doesn't really trigger an emotion or reaction in people's minds quite like the phrase fake news. And I have some a paper that I just finished reading about that and how the phrase fake news really does trigger, especially within populist media consumers, it triggers them in something. It makes them very wary of whatever it's going to they're about to read or watch. You know, we hear alternative facts. That's something that's been said before. So to your point about disinformation is still information, I think you have a very sound thesis there. Like we can throw whatever word we want on it. And there of which there are a spectrum, but yeah, I agree with you. It's all just information. It's really about who's saying it and who's receiving it, whether or not you give it any truth, not whether or not it has truth. There is no capital T objective truth. It's whether or not you perceive it to be true, and your perception of it to be true has a lot to do with how you perceive the sender of that message.
Okay. Let's reject disinformation. Or maybe adopt it for this conversation. Disinformation, what is it? You know, I don't like the idea of disinformation, but let's make an argument for the prudence of adopting balderdash placeholders, right? Because you have to, in your own mind, or at least I do, maybe because I'm autistic or something, you have to create some kind of cohesive model of the world. And that includes things that you don't see that you could never see because they could never exist. But still, there's a part of your brain that is derived from animals that needs to think of the world as a three-dimensional thing. Like there needs to be an object somewhere that's the number two, maybe, so that when you flush a spider down the hole in your bathtub and you think to yourself and you demand of your imagination, where did this spider go? There's a place that you imagine. I guarantee it's this weird place place. It's kind of dark, probably. It's wet. You know, you do think about that. Or the space in coffins where people are interred. There's a little breathing room there, right? Or outer space, or the space between walls. Typically, these are the domains of horror. And why do we have these places? Because they're cognitively necessary. We have to invent them in order for the world to be complete, to make sense. And so I think that not disinformation, but balderdash is the thing that we should cram into these places, you know, well-intentioned, engineered balderdash. And I'll give you an example, right? Let's say you're on the British Isles and you're talking to a trader, right? And he's got some spices and you have to ask where it came from. And you can't tell this person everything about navigational travel in the Middle Ages, how you got the spice. You just, well, there's an island with dragons and people with foreheads in the middle of their chests and they guard it. Like, I get it from them, right? And it's just to shut them up, right? So when they think about it, there's a thing out there, right? So that they have some brick in their head as an object to manipulate. And I'm going to say the way that we put the world together is flawed and we need these things, right? And we invent them out of nowhere. Right? Maybe even we think that the place where the spiders go is adjunctive to hell, you know, geographically. So what I'm going to say is not only is this object, some say disinformation, I'll say balderdash because I'd say, you know, because of those issues with the words earlier, this stuff is needed. It needs to be engineered. There are circumstances in which it is invented, like what happens when we die? What is the last moment of the universe? Like, what was the Big Bang? Like, all of these things, you could explain it with math, but it's a lot easier to come up with a story. Creation myths were probably this thing. Engineer something so that they don't fill it with, I got Chinese Wuhan herpes. Or, you know, you get somebody coming into the village and he's like, you ever wonder where the water goes when you flush it down the drain? I'll tell you where it goes. It goes to my kingdom. And if you don't pay me, it's coming back up. You know, you need to populate these spaces with something. And you need to tend these gardens of imagination. So that's my thesis. These bits of nonsense are not only necessary, they are the natural dark matter of coherent thought. And it's been long enough that we haven't acknowledged them as a structural feature of the way we think. And people have been screaming at us from mystic caves for thousands of years that this is the substrate of the waking life we experience. That's my thesis.
That was astonishingly close to where we were going.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll do the rest of the episode, but I mean, we will, even if me and Connor just have to record it and splice it in right there, because the thing that I was trying to approach is what I wrote down as vibes-based truth, essentially, right? A transcendental posting truth, right? This is confined to posting, right? Because the question that we'll eventually get to is, why do any of this? Why meme? Why manufacture? Why post, right? If we're so powerless
right.
to the system.
And I think vibes-based truth is the choice you make by not choosing. It's the neglect of the commons of the imagination. It's everybody cramming whatever makes sense into the hole in their own little constructed personal universe. It is no shared vision of what that dark matter is, right? And so suddenly we've got people creating universes that are not congruent with each other, but for reasons we can't say why. Because go ahead. I'm just saying the vibe-based truth is the neglect of that commons. It's everybody for themselves. It is the absence of that type of positive narrative force that I was talking about earlier.
Because the kind of posts that you've made that that I think of here are ones that are actually transcendent of fact, right? So I've seen, for instance, you troll TikTok and you find the one I'm thinking of is a lady losing her mind in like a Walmart, right? And your tagline is something like, America's a theme park and the theme park is closing down, right? The feeling that elucidates is much grander than the video or the caption. It elucidates a feeling of this social economic degeneration that we all feel and is so resonant that it like inhabits a new truth. It becomes a new feeling, a thing that you can point to and say, a fellow human, right, guy that's looking at my retweet, does your reality feel like this? Because mine does, right?
I have a theory about, and I think that what you're describing, the behavior, that the conduct that I'm up to in writing these things and essentially creating new landmarks in a shared mindscape, this is what poets do.
Yes, it's art. Right? It's literally art.
The realm of poetry is to unite the lived experience with the abstraction of language, the song that we sing. And this is a song. When you are in a village and you see this object impossibly floating in the air, untouchable, yet with the tangibility that you could infer just by the fact that it is, its appearance is so evocative. These things, these downy apparitions that you could almost touch, right? It is the job of the poet to point at the thing in the sky and to invent the concept of the cloud. And the way our cognition works, unfortunately, or some of our cognition works, is that we can't really think about a thing until it's incorporated into our language. And there's examples of this in other places, but it's almost like trying to find a man who isn't there if it's a concept that has not been charted with language. And it's an exhaustive process to take a thing that is a dynamic phenomenon that we all see and then find things that match it so that it can be pinned to those other things of language. I'm not making any sense. I'm doing a poor job of what I'm describing, but it's the job of the poet to look at the cloud and take a lasso with words and encircle that thing and bring it down to earth so that somebody who pays close enough attention to the content of a speech could almost reconstruct the physical feeling of putting their arms around this white fluffy thing that they can see. It brings it there for them to experience and for them to work with in their mind.
That's great. I really like that.
Now, I've got a question since we're kind of breaking down like what disinformation means to the layman, and we're kind of getting to a thesis here that disinformation is not it's a faulty term. We shouldn't be using the term disinformation. What word do we use instead? Because we did want to touch on things that are conveniently pushed by either media actors or even non-media actors, maybe political actors, that do kind of push a cultural narrative. You know, one of the things that comes to mind is the agenda setting and the audience priming of talking about the supposed Venezuelan gangs taking over that Colorado apartment complex. And so if we're not using disinformation, what do we say? Like, if we say lie, so
let me put a finer point let me try to describe the phenomenon of what you just said. They're talking about Venezuelan gangs infiltrating a apartment building complex and taking it over, not for the informational value of that, because it's false, it's useless, but because of the emotional impact of having to evaluate that information once you receive it. It's just like what I said earlier, when you put that sentence in somebody's mind and they have to construct, is this possible? Let me try to think about this. And then they construct in their mind the circumstances where it could be true. And if it makes sense, that's happened to them. It's as real as a memory.
It like morphs, this like story takes the shape of like a missing puzzle piece of like, what is going on in Chicago? And then there's a bunch of holes where Chicago is. And then this story like morphs into the puzzle piece and then kind of fits into the hole in their worldview where that space existed before.
Right? It's the intentional work by an actor who's familiar with his audience and the thought processes that they've been programmed into. It's like, it's inviting them to come to a conclusion that they know they want to make. It's permission.
Exactly. Let's talk about some recent disinformation that occurred. Connor, you want to start us off with this one?
Yeah, I mean, the big story that's been coming up, at least on my feed, is the Venezuelan gang that has taken over a apartment complex in Aurora, Colorado, apparently. The Edge at Lowry Apartments. Now, this apartment complex is owned by a company called CBZ Management, which is a property management company based out of New York City. Now, CBZ has alleged that the edge at Lowry has been taken over by the Tren de Aragua, or Aragua Train, that's the English translation, which is a Venezuelan gang based in the Venezuelan state of Aragua. And while Aurora police and the mayor of Aurora can confirm that there is a Tren de Aragua presence in Aurora, it's very, very small. And it's like they don't have the horses to take over a complex, right? They've only identified 10 members of the gang, six of which are now in custody. Now, the tenants of this apartment, it should be said, the tenants of this apartment say that, well, the gangs haven't taken over the complex. The real problem we have is that these apartments are run down, they're falling apart, and CBZ won't fix them. And CBZ, when pushed on this, says, well, we can't go fix them. It's full of gangs,
yes.
Which is very silly. Now, CBZ had other properties in Aurora. One of them was forcibly shut down just last month in August by the city of Aurora due to negligence from CBZ. Now, Mike Kaufman, who is, I should note, a Republican mayor of Aurora, he's gone so far as to call CBZ management and its employees slumlord. So,
yeah, the city and the city police basically agree that these guys are slumlord assholes, that these apartments are falling apart, right?
Yeah.
And then we should say, like, the big part of this story that exploded was this videotape that came out. It's like security footage of some young men walking up a staircase in an apartment complex. One of them is carrying what looks like a hunting rifle, and they go into an apartment, right?
Possibly Saul Goodman's friends, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
the allegation is that these are gang members, right? So, like, what kind of truths are, this is a real video. It did turn out to happen at an apartment complex that's owned by this company, but not the correct apartment complex. Right. And then are these gang members? There's just nothing to corroborate the idea that these are the gang members.
So CBZ hired a law firm that did a investigation, and somehow police did not find the same evidence that the law firm has and has yet to provide, by the way. But the law firm released a report saying the gang demanded half of the building's rent revenue and it's forcing tenants to pay protection money on top of their rent. The law firm provided no proof for this. But what I think is very interesting is that...
what did they do? Send you an email on, like, gang stationery? Like, what would that be? What negotiations did you incur with this illegal group?
Well, nowadays, if you want to have a negotiation in your apartment complex, there's a portal that you use, and you have to, like, register a ticket in the portal, and you let them know, and you use the subject line, Tren de Aragua, extortion money. And
yes,
you know,
Yeah.
There's a way. Apartments are changing. But to something that you said, Bernie, about the person giving them permission to make these connections, to log these memories, it's worth saying that Donald Trump was on Lex Fridman's podcast and he said a group of very tough young thugs from Venezuela taking over big areas, including buildings. They're taking over buildings. They have very big rifles. They have their big rifles, which we've seen the video, right? So I don't think, I mean, Americans' memory is very short.
Memory small, imagination big.
Yes. Americans have a small memory and a big imagination. But I do think it's worth saying that a couple of months ago, that's when the story started coming up about the Venezuelan election had been rigged. And maybe some Americans remember the last time they tried to pull this with Juan Guaido. Maybe they don't. But I guarantee you, I would put money on the fact that, you know, by the time this episode airs, the debate will have happened. The Trump-Harris debate will have happened. I'm willing to bet money that Trump is going to hammer Harris on her immigration policy, as well as allowing Venezuelan gangs to take over this complex. And I'd be willing to eat crow on this, but I don't think I'm going to have to. I bet Harris won't push back on it.
No, she'll go more right wing. No, undoubtedly.
You know, the media is putting forth a lot of, they're doing the agenda setting with Venezuela and immigration. They're not telling us what to think about it, but they're telling us to think about it, right? And Trump is priming us, or rather priming his voters, priming undecided voters, priming voters who may not want to vote for Harris and they don't know what they're going to do, right? But he is priming them to think about immigration and Venezuelan gangs as the top priority in this country, as a priority, as something that a president has to focus on more than anything else. Other real political issues, to your point, Bernie, are being tossed to the wayside so that we can focus on immigration and Venezuelan gangs that may or may not have taken over an apartment complex. My guess, they haven't.
Here's what I think. I think that this is a completely different discussion. Well, it's not completely. Okay, this is a different discussion than the disinformation thing that we're talking about, or at least it's slightly different. What we're looking at with this apartment building supposedly overtaken by Venezuelans is a classic from the playbook of fascists that are trying to explain or explain failures or excuse actions that they're about to take. So here we have a business owner that ran his business according to the rules of our society, which is shave as much as you can out of operating expenses. Do anything you can to squeeze as much return out of this thing as you can. And in fact, we're going to do that in a background where you're competing against financialized returns that couldn't possibly be matched by your physical service that you're providing as a landlord here. So this is going to be doomed to failure, but we're going to give you the excuse the entire time to really shave your operations down and immiserate these people. And once that happens and something bad goes wrong, that's when you bring out the xenophobia. That's when you bring out the scapegoats. If it's the Jews, if it's the Puerto Ricans, it doesn't really matter. You just pick up the menu and look at what the market special for the day is. And today, it's as you say, there were election issues in Venezuela. We're currently targeting Maduro. It doesn't take the smartest brain in the world to go, oh, well, if I say the same thing as the State Department, our lies will match. Why don't I just do that?
And so, critically, you talk about priming. I mean, Venezuela... But the Venezuelan migrants specifically, if you recall, were the prime, I think they were one of the prime groups in the caravan a debacle from years past. Another, I mean, totally unnecessary, illegal kind of manufactured thing. And I'd like to point out, right, the incredible irony of this now being kind of selected by both sides as a policy that they're going to scream at each other about. When in reality, it's one of the prime policies that they agree on the most, right? That they're both pushing forward on to these fascist state ends, right? Of building border camps and dehumanizing and cruelly interning, if not imprisoning, if not killing these people, right?
They've chosen terrain for the fake kaiju battle that they're going to be, you know, staging for all of us, and they've made sure that it's away from anything important that could get damaged.
Yes.
So that's exactly what we're seeing. And, you know, not only that, but they've been working on this process ever since the 70s when they took, or I think it was the 80s when they took the presidential debate moderation away from the League of Women Voters and turned it into something that was managed by the parties themselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we've got is a completely staged thing. We've got what? Kamala Harris that nobody voted for. She was put in the vice president slot after doing atrociously in the primary. And, participating in that two-step party tango where all three moderates dropped out in order to give Joe Biden the crown. I don't know if people remember what I'm even talking about or if they were.
Oh, we remember.
Alec and I were in Vegas when Bernie won the Nevada caucus in 2020, and we were like, things are going to be okay. Things are going to be good again.
We were elated. I mean, I specifically talked to Connor. It may be like second to the birth of my child, like the best I've ever felt ever was that night in Vegas.
My name is Bernie. Somebody named Bernie who ostensibly thinks about the same things I do on the same level of the political spectrum is going to be president. I'm Bernie. All the good things that he does, I'm going to be able to show up at the DSA meetings and say, hey, it's Bernie, you know? And now he's like a bag of dog shit tied around my neck. Oh, my God. What a sheepdog.
Now
what
we're
sellout. What a miserable failure.
God, that's how I feel
Bernie
about
it. In a Kissinger coffin with the rest of these guys, a big old trench outside of Washington, D.C.
That's how I feel about Connor Oberst just hanging around my neck. Ugh, just a shitty performer.
My advice for the presidential election is don't pay attention to it at all. It's all complete bullshit. If it stops working in the sense that it stops captivating the American people, things will be jiggered around until it's a closer horse race and you start shouting again. Don't pay attention. Look around at the shit that matters.
Okay, so like Connor talked about priming. The next story like is so predictable, but it's all priming, right? Because this reaction, right, disinformation, if we want to call it that, is just instinctive at this point, right? So there was a school shooting, unfortunately, because that's a reality of American life. And they found pictures of the shooter hours later. The shooter is a chubby 14-year-old with long hair. So you can guess what started happening online. Basically, like the trans allegations started immediately, right? One, race allegations. This is probably a black person. Incorrect, right? Two, this is a trans person in a string of trans murderers.
So what they're doing is they're inviting people to make an impermissible conclusion. The automatic conclusion that they're predisposed to make. Oh, of course, this was something that the other guys did. Of course, this is something that affirms my version of reality. Whatever this event was, I'm so overstressed that I'm just going to adopt the most convenient version of facts that I can and run with it. And I'm going to run over anybody that says otherwise. Now, I don't know if anybody reading, listening to this podcast has read a gentleman by the name of Gramsci.
Yeah, we know Gramsci. We know Gramsci.
Okay, so, you know, what we've been doing lately what the right wing has been doing lately has been playing around with this. And it's something that before I read Gramsci, I was kind of thinking about this as well. And that is, what if we pretended something was true long enough that the material conditions came along just because we're all doing it, that it happened to be true, right? What if we played pretend long enough that something actually becomes real? And, you know, they could actually play pretend long enough so that that person actually becomes trans. They've been watching certain miraculous transubstantiation of facts in their cognitive environment happen, where they're allowed to say whatever convenient thing that they want, whatever racist indulgence that they want to adopt to explain the world around them, they can do it. And because they live in an environment without consequence, and because this is an island of imagination that is completely causatively removed from their day-to-day experience, they have the luxury of doing that, right? Why don't they imagine that black people are on the moon with an empire and they're trying to mess with them with radio waves or whatever, right? So it's what we're doing is we're watching people engaging in public fantasy lives.
Well, I mean, and not just as individuals, but as entire groups, right? Like the thing I'm getting at is that I think I've been aware of this only recently, probably since the Trump shooting, that this kind of like engagement farming or like rage baiting behavior on social media, which is the prime way that we interact with most like other people, right, in a political way, that like rage baiting is actually getting more engagement and is far more resonant than the underlying news that is the kernel that's driving it, right?
I want to change it from rage bait. I want to separate a couple things because there is the dopamine rush that you get. That's the candy wrapping, the dopamine rush that you get when talking about something that's like really bloody that you're going to get into that makes you mad. And then there's the self-comfort aspect of adopting some racist state of facts, right? That makes everything make sense. I'm racist against black people. It was a black person. You know? So not only are you angry, you get that buzz, but also you get that affirmation. So I think rage baiting is a different thing where you tell somebody something that's wrong and you get them to correct it. Or you say things to make people angry. I think the idea that you just kind of casually toss out there that, yeah, this is an affirmation of my worldview. This was a trans black person. That is the phenomenon I've been talking about earlier, where you get the anger and then you get the affirmation. It's self-soothing behavior. And the groups of people that tell each other this reality and reinforce it are soothing each other in a way that they don't have access to in real life because these people are loners. They are hugging a mesh wire mama, monkey mama.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to get that.
No. It's a reference to the chimp experiments, right?
That's the two
mothers, the carpet and wire mother, right? I will include it in the show notes, guys. I don't know. But so, Bernie, do you agree? Like, I actually feel like this kind of self-propaganda, right? I include all of this under the blanket of disinformation, but you are correct. It's a kind of self-delusion, self-truth creation. I don't know what you want to describe this, but I believe that we are either it's becoming more naked or it's becoming more true that this is in fact the actual driver of culture and politics. Right. And like one of the things that made me aware of this was I recently was unemployed for a long time, very happily, actually. I hate working, but you got to make some money. So I recently rejoined the workforce. I live in Louisiana, so I've got a lot of conservative coworkers, for instance. Right. And one of the things that when people say, you know, the world is just crazy now. And I say, I agree. Right. And the thing that keeps getting brought up is like, the in-school trans species litter box story from like 5 or 6 years ago. And I'm hearing this in 2024. And that must have become that what that's telling me is that is such a transcendent truth, right? That it is passed through time and nothing else has supplanted it in this person's mind as a primary driver of, in quotes, why the world is crazy, right? This entirely fabricated idea.
We talked earlier. I mean, one of the things we said earlier was that Americans have short memory, big imagination. And so I would not be shocked if this story is making the rounds again as part of some planned October surprise kind of effect.
It could be, and I'm not even aware of it.
I'm going to give you guys another example that's a little counterintuitive of the same type of self-soothing behavior that I was talking about earlier. Belief as a method of like just feeling better about stuff. This person talking about children being allowed to defecate in litter boxes in their classrooms as sort of an extension of gender identity going forward to species identity. I believe that what this person felt was an emotion, anxiety. And I think that what this person was confronted with was a world that cannot be explained. And so they have to explain to themselves, why do I feel anxious? And the lowest investment form of ways of solving that thought is just reaching out and taking the completed thought that somebody else is offering you. Why am I anxious? Probably because they're making the kids shit in litter boxes. Have you seen them? You know, it's like if you don't have an answer, just use the one that they're providing to you. They never would have dreamt of that on their own. You know that that is a form anxiety that they have taken in on themselves, but you can't get worried about things if there is no core anxiety that you are articulating through this.
I think there's also something to the fact that there was a lot of pushback on Biden trying to erase student loan debt, and there was a lot of bootstrapping comments of, oh, I paid my student loan. Shouldn't I get my money sent back? So I think a lot of these people are secretly upset that, oh, when I was coming up and I shit in the classroom, I got expelled. I should be able to go back and shit in a litter box in eighth grade. That's what I think the anger is really coming from. They're jealous that they have to shit in a toilet.
Like a projected self.
There's something to that. I'm going to tell you what it is. And it has to do with gay Republican men. These people are themselves incredibly repressed.
Yes. That's
and
yeah.
It feels to them that there is some social contract in play. That if they have to tolerate this personal sexual repression, then others must as well. In some form, they have to pay their dues. And I think that this is why J.D. Vance thinks that women are obligated to bear children, because the man is himself very obviously gay, and paying his dues by being married to an Indian race supremacist and putting babies in her. And if he has to do that, then the other people who are whiny little bitches need to put up and shut up and pop those babies out too. That's the exact reasoning that a lot of these people have going through their heads. And it's why they're invented. It's jealousy. If they can shit in a litter box, why can't I suck dicks? Why can't I
Connor,
suck
dicks? If you're not aware, Bernie was first or second, I don't know, on the case in a TikToker and then some other reporting about J.D. Vance essentially living pre-politics, living a dual life in Tennessee, I believe, with another man. There's a
this
photo.
This is completely believable. This is completely true. This is not misinformation. It is a TikTok of one individual's testimony of going on it, the circumstances which led up to, and the experience of dating J.D. Vance at an Applebee's as he looked into his empty eyes and got weirded out. The guy describes the interaction. They were apparently underage at the time and had connected through this website that was well known. And so he goes through this 10-minute video describing all this and says afterwards, you know, he was kind of looking for a reason to get rid of J.D. Vance. He says that J.D. was who's going by another name then, which is significant. The man has changed names several times in his life. He's going through identity stuff. Asked him to perform a sexual act, which involved ejaculating onto his gym socks. So we look at the couch accusation of J.D. Vance, and we know that there's something there, and we fill it for now with this thing that makes sense. And the great thing about the couch is it doesn't demean women. It doesn't blame minorities, and it serves the purpose of a cognitive placeholder because we're like, yeah, he does do that something weird. I don't, the je ne sais quoi. Well, now we sais quoi. It's a couch fucking.
Holy shit.
You got to see this.
This is all full circle.
If you see the J.D. Vance pictures, you're like, oh, my God, this J.D. Vance. You're like, oh, my God, it's J.D. Vance.
My trolling. And this is the same with the psychiatrist who obviously wants to engage in incestuous self-copying. What's his name? Jordan Peterson. He wants his daughter to milk his cum, right?
Yeah, he does have an odd Freudian thing going
on
with his
daughter.
When I
target these people, there is some kind of geist, some kind of subconscious thing that I can detect in them through my lifetime of posting, just reading into people's words. I know what goes on in their minds to make that happen. I got Jordan Peterson. I got that fucker. I got J.D. Vance. I got all these people, and I figured out how to sell it to the audience that also titillated their worst ideas, right? Just gave them permission to go insane and populate their brain with the most ludicrous, hilarious shit while laughing at it. I invite them to do this. This is multiple level artisanship that you see. So when I describe the personal sexual motivations of these people and I get it right to the point where their family is disrupted and they're publicly humiliated, that is a phenomenon that's worth studying. That's some magic.
That's
what
why
I
we're
do
here.
Is magic. And that's why we're here.
It's art. Wait, so you are yourself, you have been alleged to be a Russian state actor. So
right.
Let's transition to a quick synopsis of, again, this week's news. And let's talk about some alleged Russian state actors. So DOJ released a tranche of, well, I don't know if they released the document. Let me.
Can I do this?
Pertinent. Yeah. Go for it.
All right. I used to work in the ASUA, Southern District, New York, Major Crimes and Narcotics. Here's what I'm going to say. This week, the Department of Justice dropped an indictment showing that foreign money from Russia has been pouring into the United States through front companies. Those front companies have been responsible for paying these obnoxious podcasters that nobody wants to listen to, like Bronze Age Pervert, Tim Pool. They are the reason Tim Pool has a house. There's a reason why he can talk down to people on the internet and say that he's a job haver and we're not.
Benny Johnson and Rubin, they're like the most unemployable conservative, a nothing in terms of like personality. That Rubin, the only reason that this guy doesn't have to get a regular job is because now the fucking Russians are paying him.
These are indictments. An indictment means that a prosecutor thinks that they can take this to court and get a win. And federal prosecutors have a 90% plus conviction rate. They win. And they don't drop an indictment like this unless there's more coming. And what we know is that there was a high pressure of money coming into this country, and it went somewhere. And the people receiving that almost certainly are in violation of being unregistered agents of a foreign power, which is a crime. And so by involving Tim, it means that maybe they got him, maybe they don't, but he's got to be shitting bricks right now, because if there's any kind of conversation he or an associate had that would tip him off to the fact that he's getting a foreign government's money to talk to us about seed oils, taking the sperm away from our nuts or whatever the fuck, he's going to federal prison. He's going to not be able to wear a beanie there.
So
he might convert to Islam to cover up his head.
That would be awesome. That would be so fucking sick. Yeah, if he has to wear like a taqiya or like a kufi instead of because he has to convert to Islam to wear some sort of beanie to hide his like bald spot, that would be sick.
See, I don't see him getting out of prison by a pardon or anything. If he were to get put in there, Tim Pool is nobody's friend. It's extraordinary that he's employed at all. He's marginally competent at everything he does. And in fact, the mere fact of his existence on the public stage is the most astonishing thing about him. He is an utter nebbish. And so to learn that that is the level of talent it takes to become a paid foreign agent has made me so fucking jealous. So jealous. Because
it's an indictment of America.
That could be me shitting bricks right now with a real house and a real kitchen.
So people have speculated that like this pressure on Tim Pool and Dave Rubin and stuff, it probably will amount to them maybe testifying as character witnesses up the chain, right? So like Lauren Chen, another despicable actor who I haven't heard of in some years, but I was very glad to know is potentially indictable, right? We should say the two indictments are for basically two Russian guys, right, who are heading up this good old USA or something, right? Some oddly named media network that's supposed to be paying off Tenet. I can't wait to see these rats turn on each other. But it should be said, right, like as hilarious and fun as this is, that the actual like amounts of money that are talked about being circulated in this criminal conspiracy are not very large when it comes to like media, right? And by the way, in foreign state money and media, as we kind of know it, right? That this is in fact like a pretty small little kernel. But
so
like
you've underlined. Go ahead. Sorry, you've underlined something good. Something doesn't smell right here. Why is the FBI doing a major press release indictment drop on some fucking dork in a beanie? Why do they care? When I was working SDNY, like there was a floor of like $75,000 where it didn't even exist if it was below that. And this guy's getting, and that was back, that was like 10 whatever years ago. This guy's getting payments of $100,000, you know, real de minimis stuff. So you want to look at prosecutorial strategies. What were they thinking when they were bringing this to bear? And I have a theory that they were serving three masters. First master that they're trying to serve is the banking sector, the idea of enforcing our financial restrictions on Russia, which was a huge humiliation. What we promised Armageddon to Russia when we confiscated the assets of their central bank and the central banks of a couple other countries, did a bunch of like real bandit shit, said, you're no longer going to be in the banking system. You are in trouble, mister. And so what did they do? They didn't burn to the ground. No, they created their own payment clearance system to rival that of SWIFT. And they are linking with China. And in fact, all of this stuff has been done without so much as skipping a beat. The Russian economy is doing great. Ooh, so what do you do about that? You got to do something to make sure they can't spend any of that money. You have to cut off the money flows between Russia and the United States so that they don't get to spend that ill-gotten gains like Israel is influencing our politics. So that's one master that they're serving. So if I'm the FBI director, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to satisfy that interest group in government, right? Okay, so the next group that they serve, the Democrats, who are upset about misinformation online.
This is Russiagate like 3.0, 4.0.
It's throwing them a bone. It's setting up the ball right before the election so that they can bitch and whine if they lose and bitch and whine before it. It will soften the blow for a loss, which might be coming. So they like this. It reinforces the reality that they've been trying to shove down our throats for the last, 8 years, that the election of Trump was illegitimate. And then suddenly being really surprised when that line of argument was turned back on them with Biden. So this is adding to that narrative. I'm sure somebody got a bone tossed for that reason. Okay. And the third reason, and this is, I think, a quiet one. They have a saying in China, or at least a Chinese cultural saying. I'm not sure how sensitively I can say, but in mainland China, they have a saying that says, if you kill the chicken to frighten the monkey, what you do if you got a monkey that's annoying you, trying to steal your stuff in your village, they'll just come down and take things. You go, you look at the monkey, you know, you look at him, you maintain eye contact, you pick up the chicken. Chicken makes a lot of noise, right? While looking at the monkey, you go, you know, you dispatch the chicken brutally. You make sure that it looks awful. You kill the chicken to frighten the monkey. You can't get at the monkey, but you can get at the chicken. I think that there's a lot of money going around influencing people. And I think that a lot of it is teal-backed. We can see that with the success of certain podcasts. A lot of our media landscape is AstroTurf. A lot of it is even AstroTurf from foreign agents, such as Ukrainians, or what they call the China lobby. It used to be big in the 70s, like the Taiwanese lobby, the people that want us to go to war with China over there. Or, let's see, what's the one I forgot? The other conflict, the Israeli lobby, right? So this is setting the stage for getting ready to start doing these types of foreign agent prosecutions and firing a shot across the bow of Peter Thiel and the other domestic oligarchs that want to create an environment here like what they have in Russia for those oligarchs. So those are my three reasons why this nobody would be picked up by the hand of God and raised like Simba as an object of contemplation for all us all to think about what not to do with ourselves.
Yeah,
don't take money from Russia is the lesson. And if anybody in your organization knows it comes from Russia, you're going to go to fucking jail.
Yes.
I think it's worth pointing out that Tenet Media was founded like a month before Russia invaded Ukraine. Alec and I were just talking about that the other day. And it's definitely a slap in the face to America for, you know, Russia invades Ukraine. RT, Russia Today, their U.S. operations are shut down immediately. And a lot of content is scrubbed from the internet. And, you know, shout out to Jaffer Khan, a comedian who a lot of his material is just gone because he worked on Redacted Tonight on Russia Today. So for them to immediately say, oh, we're going to keep doing this secretly, we're going to still keep operating in America just through smoke and mirrors. Yeah, to what you said about your first master of, you know, you have to reinforce these banking regulations. Yeah, it's definitely, it's an embarrassment.
Oh, yeah. We look like fucking morons. We're eating shit internationally. The hegemony that we've got with this financial mechanism, we're getting rinsed. We've lost control of the Red Sea. We've lost the biggest naval battle since World War II. We are losing the hegemony in financial fact and in physical material reality and simultaneously.
It feels like everything we do is a step in the wrong direction, right? I mean, everything we do seems to backfire tremendously. It's American foreign policy maybe outside of the scope of talking about online disinformation, but maybe not. This is at least the core issue, right? That is driving this discussion.
Well, yes, I'm gonna take it back home for us all, which is why do we live now in an era where what we were discussing as disinformation, but kind of explored as sort of fantastic tools of cognition that are necessary, whatever. Why do we live in a world where we need so much varying dark matter to hold our cognition together? And it's because we live in the context of an empire in decline. And so everybody is needing to explain failures that they're seeing in their day-to-day that are not reflected in the structure and narrative of the overall whole, because we are losing coherence.
Wait, that's perfect. So the reason that I brought this up is not the Tim Pool stuff, actually. So Wired had a story that has to do with the indictment and the surrounding documents that DOJ released. Because this, to me, is the most interesting part of this whole thing, is that they talk about good old USA. Good old USA is this project so aptly named. Social Design Agency is a think tank slash whatever this thing is, this money doling out device, right? And they say that the affidavit, I'm going to read from the Wire article. The affidavit references one document maintained by Social Design Agency that contains a list of more than 2,800 people identified as influencers. Now, by the way, these are unnamed in the affidavit. And now immediately the speculation begins as to who these people are by various online, like Twitter people, right? Start going, I bet I know who's on the list. And they enumerate a bunch of people that they disagree with who are, in their opinion, Russian state actors or, right, like we talked about this, this spectrum, right? On one end, you have a literal shill, a paid state actor. Maybe you'd have like a literal Kremlin agent or KGB agent, right? Then you have like a paid shill of Russia. And then on the other side, you have what these people, maybe what you would describe if it's, you know, something political that you care about, like a useful idiot for the other side. And these can be people, I mean, I guess like me, right? I'm an American citizen. I'm not paid by Russia, right? I can't prove that to you, but trust me, I'm not. I have some opinions that might be bad, right? That you think are pro-Russian opinions. So you might describe me as a useful idiot, right? Of the Russian state or something like that, right? But what we begin to actually do online is conflate and compress that spectrum, right? Because you don't know who's on this list and you don't know who's getting paid. So to actively conflate state actors and useful idiots, Americans like you, citizens that are expressing political opinions, which is their literal right to do, right? To compress these things is, I think, an actual goal of a state security apparatus or, you know, I mean, certainly like the FBI, people who mean to actively conflate these things in that kind of form of disinformation, right? Of state disinformation is, are you on one side, are you Lauren Chen, who's receiving cash money dollars from a think tank that's backed by the Kremlin? Or are you Alec, who has bad opinions and maybe is a paid agent, or maybe is at least on the spectrum, right?
So this fact has been established, a partial fact at that. An indictment has been dropped with censored names. And in response, people look at this empty space and they start to populate it with guesses. And if they're a racist, they could look at that and say, ah, yes, these are probably all the black people I've been hating on, right? Or if they're a Democrat, they could say, these are the Republibots I've heard about. Or if they're a Democrat or if they're a Republican, they can say, this is the George Soros strike team.
Yes. Yeah.
Everybody looking at the same thing and that empty space is invited to fill it. Now, the purpose of thinking about things in this way is to sort of come up with information that you don't have. I mean, it's like, what is tomorrow going to look like? It doesn't exist, but you can make several guesses. If you're an idiot, you make racist guesses. If you're a very smart person, you think, okay, you think along the lines of who would pay money. You know, you have a discussion like we had earlier, which nobody has time for. But I'm going to contrast that with a different type of striking out into the darkness and hitting something. What I do with regards to making things up, because I see an empty spot where something should be, and then it turns out that there's something there. I think what we're doing is exposing a lot of people who have messed up models of how the world works. And that's great. It's the internet. It's where people make fools of themselves. I also think we're observing a phenomenon that, if it's working right, gives me the power, despite never having met the man, to look inside the brain of Jordan Peterson, to look inside the soul of one J.D. Vance, and fill that with a fantasy that turns out to have substance. So we have to think about these two processes, one where it works well and one where it does not. The same thing is being done in both circumstances. You're casting out in the dark for something to lean against in order to keep yourself up. In one case, somebody's built a banister of racism and they're going to fall through a trap door eventually, whatever sort of ultimate material reality that model bumps up against. And then you have other people who are busy making weird chirping noises in the room and thereby gaining information about the objects in the room. that nobody could know about except for through their little secret sauce.
That's such a perfect analogy. Is like cultural, political echolocation, right? Is like posting.
Yes, that's posting. Exactly right. That's exactly right.
It's a
method of collective thought, and it's the only context in which words really make sense, where you're using them as naturally as you would breathe, and that's how they are born, the conversations that we're having.
So, Bernie, like Matt Chrisman, right, always says, after the Bernie campaign, everybody feels bad. We feel lost. I feel lost more and more every day, right? So, like, this thing that we're talking about
out for something and it wasn't there.
Yeah, exactly. It fell through. The board wasn't thick enough and you fell through the floor, right? I mean, that's what happened. There's a weird, odd dichotomy that I'm frustrated with, which is like the dead internet theory stuff, right? So, like, I don't know if they've proven, but I'm willing to believe it, right? That, like, Twitter, especially as my social media of choice, that like 50% of the posts are just fucking bots, right? And like the biggest accounts are doing like engagement farming, and then a bunch of like the big blue checks are just doing, right, like we talked about, like rage baiting and just like awful politics and just beating each other off over shit that they made up or like terrible memes. Some of them now are like kind of proven to be literal state actors, right? So like, where do we go from here, right? I feel like a powerless little poster. And why am I doing any of this? Why am I participating? It just makes me feel bad. I should log off. And then there's like Bernie's posts, right? There's Falconry Finance's posts that somehow, do this like cultural echolocation and find truths and then reach out and kind of like change the world. Can we all as a group start doing that in a way that actually changes things for the better? I don't know, maybe. Right.
That's what I'm trying to do. I mean, that's my entire Falcon project. I mean, observing this phenomenon, experimenting with it, carrying it out, because when it comes to the modern day, we can split the fucking atom. If we can pay attention in class long enough and not sell off the plant and blow it up, we can split the atom. We can get energy from nothing. There's no reason for us to be burdening the living cycle of this earth for materials or depriving animals of the flesh that they need to live. We should not be doing that, because it takes a deer a lot of effort and they really like their blood and their flesh. This shit's all got to end. Everything that I was talking about, having to excuse yourself for existing and not view life as a gift, to have to justify why a society should have to support you when you are a creature that has been evolved after millions and millions of years to exist in the context of a society. And depriving people of that is a primary driving force that we use to get them into the production mines. Depriving people of their natural impulses, their natural rights. And all of that pencils out at the end of the day. When things don't make sense, you need a simple conclusion. It's the Jews. It's the blacks. It's Bernie Goldsmith and his invisible gang squad. You know, it's anything that will allow you to simplify this inconceivable world into something that's workable, so that when you think about stumbling around in the dark, there's sometimes probably going to be a thing there to lean against instead of where you fall over. And of course, you don't have to show everybody that you're a moron and you don't know what's going on by making a bunch of eeping noises like I'm doing, right? That kind of shows that I'm a moron if I'm spinning around going like, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? Right?
No, I love it.
It's a dangerous thing to do, to let it all hang out like that. Anyway, that was a long way to kind of describe how all of these necessary crutches of cognition have put us in this place, how not minding them has also sort of filled these voids with demons that can be used to manipulate us, and how we really need to get our act together as a populace, as a race, as humanity, and return to owning our own dreams.
There you go.
That about does it for today. Bernie, I want to thank you for coming on. Do you have anything that you'd like to plug?
Put a bird in your name if you want to join the gang. That's all I got to say. that's it.
All right.
We're joined by at Falconry Finance on Twitter, one of my favorite Twitter posters. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Bernie.
Thank you so much. It's been a blast. I really love talking about this high-minded concept stuff.
I really hope to have you back.
Send us an email at propagandospod@gmail.com if you want to comment. I'll probably post this on the Twitter too.
Yeah. Follow us on Twitter or Instagram at propagandospod. We're on Blue Sky, but that's a mouthful, so I'll post it in the show notes.
Yeah. All right.
All right.